So I'm going to talk about something that has been kind of overlooked the past years, which is a property which was in some people's minds, but was never really formally explicited. So this property is called non-malleability. So I'm going to discuss exactly what this property is and what we can do based on this property. So this is basically the outline. I'm going to first report some new impossibility results for RSA-based cryptography. So it's kind of the main application of non-malleability is actually in impossibility proofs for RSA-based cryptography. So I'll come to that in a minute. So I don't know exactly how familiar you're with cryptography proofs, security proofs for cryptographic schemes. So what I'm going to do is going to take a very simple example of RSA encryption, that is RSA OAP, and I'm going to apply the impossibility results to this in particular. And then I will proceed giving a kind of formal definition of non-malleability and instance non-malleability. And apply this property to show how we can get these impossibility results for both encryption or RSA-based signatures. And then the main goal of this talk is to attract more attention of this remarkable property, which is non-malleability. So far I'm not capable of proving that commonly used RSA key generators are non-malleable. I guess it's a very difficult computational theoretic problem. But if you have ideas, or if you can come up with a counterexample of some kind, that would be great. So we recently found evidence that if you look at RSA signatures, so basically FDH or PSS or PSS with message recovery, you have like a complete family of RSA-based signatures using RSA plus the padding function. Well, we have found a proof that actually the enforceability of these signatures cannot be equivalent to inverting RSA in the standard model. So it's kind of contradictory towards well-known proof standing in the random oracle model. So in this model, we can prove that all these signature schemes can be shown to be equivalent to inverting RSA. In the standard model, where you don't have to deal with random oracles, but with hash functions instead, you have to leave a complete description of the hash functions, then I show you that you cannot have this equivalent anymore. So it's like an instantiability result. And furthermore, the same impossibility result stands for RSA encryption. So in which case we have to deal with CCA security instead of unforgeability. But basically, if you look at RSA OAP, then we can say for sure that there is no equivalence with inverting RSA in the standard model. It is the same thing holds for factoring-based cryptography. So if you look at Rabin or Rabin-Williams or any other variants, or EPOC, which is actually a variant of the Okamoto Uchiyama's crypto system, then these systems are not equivalent to factoring, which is again a complete contradiction with what is known in the random oracle model. Because in the random oracle model, they can be, all of these schemes can be shown to be equivalent to factoring. Again, so when you try to instantiate them, this equivalence is not preserved. And we have also another result which is basically based on the same proof techniques. That roughly tells that Rabin signatures, that is using the Rabin primitive plus a padding function, all of these signatures cannot be equivalent to factoring either. So, but to prove these results, we need a certain number of assumptions. So the first assumption is that we only deal with single key encryption or signature schemes. and it is the public key is formed of only one RSM address. So if you use encryption twinning, for instance, or signature twinning, as in a certain number of well-known schemes like Noor-Jung and then the left work Noor for encryption, then the impossible key results do not apply anymore. So it's the impossibility just stands for single key crypto systems. The other assumption is that all the hash functions that are used in paddings are actually unkeyed. So which is the case in real life? Because in real life you have to fix, you know, the functions, and well, it is a common procedure to instantiate them with using SHA-1, for instance. And there is no like extra string embedded into the public key that would allow to pick up one function in a family of hash functions in practice. So it is very unclear that if you just take all these schemes and then you replace the hash functions by a family of hash functions, then the same results do apply. Yes, so far it's very unclear. But it seems likely that the impossibility results do not stand anymore. And as a third assumption, we have to assume that the key generation has a certain property, which is called non-malleability. So the simple non-malleability property is that if I give you an RSM address N, and if you attempt to factor it, and if I grant you access to some kind of magical factoring oracle that factors moduli, which are different from the modules I gave you, then this extra oracle does not help you to factor N. So it's very easy to state this property, but it's there are a number of definitional issues about that. And the other non-malleability property we have to deal with is instance non-malleability. So instant malleability, instead of trying to factor a model, is just trying to extract an if root from the model as I gave you. And in this case, if I give you an extra, this again magical oracle that extracts roots for other parameters, so with a public modulus and a public exponent for which the pair is different from the pair I gave you, then this should not help you in any ways. So these two properties seem to hold using common RSA key generation, but it is unknown so far whether I don't have a proof that if you take a planar RSA, for instance, or low exponent excess RSA, this property really holds. So it's one of the open problems. So first, what is an RSA instance generator? So if I give you a modulus n, if I give you an integer mod n, let's say y, and a public exponent e, extracting an eth root is a denoted RSA of y, e, and n. And usually in cryptography, we deal with hard instances of this problem. So we consider a generator, gen, which is a probabilistic algorithm, which takes as input a security parameter. You just press on the button, and then you get a hard instance, which is the public modulus and the public exponent, as well as the secret, which is the inverse of E mod phi of n. And we say that this generator is epsilon tau. A probabilistic algorithm epsilon to invert this RSA key generator if with some probability at least epsilon the algorithm can come up with the if root of a given number log n. So inverting RSA is denoted inv of gen. So to introduce another problem, which is kind of related to RSA, which is called the one more RSA problem. So it was used by a number of authors in a number of works. And it's a very natural generalization of inverting the generator. In the one more RSA problem, so it's, let's say, let's take a parameter L. So the L one more RSA problem is that I give you a random public key, NE. I give you L plus one, let's say random integers, Y0, YL, what M. And I give you access to some kind of magical RSA oracle that extracts roots for these parameters N and E, but at most L times. And I want you to give me the L plus one roots, what M. So it is very easy to show that if you set L equal to zero, then it's exactly the inversion problem. And if you take two parameters, L1 and L2, such that L1 is smaller than L2, then you have a hierarchy. Actually, the one more problems form like a unidimensional hierarchy of problems. And the one at position zero is exactly the inversion. So we have a number of relations between these RSA-related problems. So we have the problem of factoring the generator, which means that in average you can compute this key matching a given public key, randomly selected from the using the generator. And there is a gap problem, which is basically you try to factor a randomly chosen public key given access to an RSA oracle, which is configured, parameterized by the same public key. So if you look at the hierarchy, it's kind of simple. We have the factoring problem, which is actually stronger than inverting RSA. It is stronger as well than the gap problem, and we have the one more RSA problem, which is here. So in schemes, it is usually the case that we can link the security of a particle ecosystem to one of these problems here. These ones are less familiar, but usually factoring and inverting the generator are very, they are problems of reference. Okay, so let me take the example of RSA encryption. So I'm going to focus on a certain family of encryption schemes, which are the ones basically that combine an instance generated gen with a padding function mu. And the padding function is just usually a concatenation of a composition of very simple things like hash functions, concatenation, string concatenation, XORs or whatever. So usually you have to, so you have a certain message space here, a random space, and you map that to strings of length k, where k is basically the size of the mother list, for instance. And you have like a function mu minus one, which is the one that inverts the padding. So if you give a y, basically the mu minus one function just recovers the plain text if it exists, and if it doesn't exist, then returns some kind of failure symbol. So if you look at RSA OAP, it's exactly that, given that mu is a composition of two hash functions, kind of your rules. So what are the basic security notions for RSA encryption? So we provide a security notion by just combining an adversary of goal. That is, we have to specify what the adversary is trying to achieve with the resources, the computational resources is granted access to. So among the goals that are classical, there is the breakability. So we say that the scheme is breakable if you, even the public key, if the adversary is capable of extracting the secret key. So it's a very, very basic security notion. The other is that if I give the adversary a random size of text, the adversary shouldn't be able to retrieve the whole text, which is another basic requirement. Another one which is more interesting from a cryptographic point of view is a stronger goal, which is indistinguishability. So indistinguishability means that the adversary picks two messages, M0 and M1. I encrypt one of the one of them without telling the adversary which one I encrypted, and then I ask the adversary to guess which one was encrypted. So, and for this talk, I introduce another one, which is root extractability, which is that the adversary shouldn't be able to extract any fruit by hand. So the adversary is trying to, by interacting with the scheme, to directly extract any fruit by hand. So in attack models, we have the basic chosen pentax attack, in which the adversary is given nothing else than the public key. A plain text checking attack, which is probably a notion of attack people are less familiar with, but in these attacks, the adversary is given access to a plain text checking oracle. So basically, the plain text checking oracle, you give to that oracle a pair, plain text cipher text pair, and the oracle tells you whether this particular encryption encrypts the given plain text. So it's a 0-1 oracle. And of course, you have the chosen ciphertext attacks, in which the adversary is given an adaptive a decryption oracle. You can make queries to adaptively. And so if we try to draw the map of all security notions, they have kind of black box reductions, trivial reductions between them. So using this notation, actually BKCPA denotes a computational problem. So it's a security notion and at the same time it's a computational problem. And using that notation, you can relate problems, security notions using the fact that they are problems and they can be reduced from one another. So basically the stronger security notion is BKCPA, which is the adversary basically is given nothing, and except the public key, and he tries to come up with the corresponding secret key, which is unique. And so you have this hierarchy here. So this line is probably less familiar. It's the one in which the adversary tries to extract a root directly by interacting with the scheme. So here you have the line of 1-1s and then distinguishability. So every time you see that arrow here means that you have a polynomial time black box reduction between the two problems. So what do we know about the security notions for RSA encryption? Well, it's true to see that if you look at BKCPA, it's exactly the problem of factoring, okay? Because I give the adversary a public key and it comes up with a secret key. It is, by definition, it is exactly factoring. If I look at the root extraction problem in a CPA attack, it's exactly an attack in which the adversary tries to extract new food. So it's exactly inverting the generator. And the other obvious reduction is that if you look at BKCCA, so in the BKCCA game, you have an adversary that tries to factor the modulus, given access to a decryption oracle. So it is kind of easy to see that if you increase the power of the oracle to an oracle that extracts if roots, then you get the gap problem. So you have this kind of you have a complete hierarchy here. And the interesting thing is that all of these problems are actually hard if you assume that the gap problem is intractable. So whatever happens in the design, you cannot have that line to collapse to zero. Never happens. of these problems cannot be polynomial under the assumption that the gap problem is difficult. Okay? So now our results are that if you assume for a minute that you have an equivalence between the 1-1S under a CPA attack for one of the encryption schemes I've been describing, if you assume that you have an equivalence with inverting RSA, with inverting the generator, then we prove that the problem of extracting a root under a CCA attack is polynomial. So it may seem obvious in a certain sense, because if we have an equivalence here, basically it means that I can extract the if root mod n of something given access to an inverter, an adversary that decrypts without having the secret key. So it seems that if I use that reduction to solve that problem, it is exactly the same, because here solving this problem consists in just extracting a root, even access to a decryption oracle. So it seems to be exactly the same thing. But in real life, it's not, because if you look at the reduction here, you may have a reduction that doesn't call the adversary oracle with the same public key as the one that was given here. So it's not that obvious to see that if you have an equivalence here, then this security notion here collapses. But this is what instance malleability allows you to do. So it's a fundamental property because of that. The other result is that now if you assume that you have a stronger equivalence, that is, if you assume that you have indistinguishability equivalent to inverting RSA, then it's even worse. You get that the root extraction under a PCA attack is actually polynomial. So these are mainly the main results here, which are kind of fundamental to RSA encryption. And so these are going to be published in a couple of conferences, forthcoming conference, the next month. But okay, so the motivation behind these impossibility results is to be able to say something about the standard model security of RSA encryption or signature schemes. Because so far we don't know anything about that. So what we need to achieve to prove to give a proof of impossibility is that notion of instance malleability or instance non-malleability. So I give you now the intuition of what this property basically is. So again, a generator is instance malleable if solving RSA for a given public key is easier when I give you access to that magical oracle that extracts roots for other public keys. But I just have to impose here that the public keys that are given to the magical oracle have to be in the range of the generator. It's the unconstraint. So it's very easy to come up with examples of generators that are malleable in that definition. So basically, if I allow in the key generation that public exponents are actually composite values, then it's very easy to see that if I give you access to an oracle that extracts E1 roots and another one that extracts E2 roots, mod the same n, then you can extract E1, E2 roots. So it's kind of a trivial thing. And same thing if I allow the size of the public modulus as well as the number of prime factors to vary, then it is trivial that if you can extract an nth root mod alpha n, then you can extract an nth root mod n. That for this we have to allow in key generation that both n and alpha n belong to the range of the generator. if you combine the two, if you combine, if you have a generator in which you can combine these two malleability properties, then the generator is malleable. But is there another way of having a malleable generator which does not comply with these two properties? It's kind of a very challenging question. So can one see a non-trivial example of a P generator for which we have, you know, this malleability property, but in which you don't use one of the two, one of these two properties? So if you look at real life generators, it doesn't seem to be the case. That is, most instance generators avoid instance malleability. So for instance, if you take a plan RSA, then you have just P2 primes. And the public exponent is a prime E. And that's it. So you can just use the previous properties, because you cannot play with the number of factors in the public modulus, or you cannot play with the prime factors in E, because there's only one. So this generator typically seems to be non-malleable. Same thing with low exponent RSA, in which the public exponent is fixed to a small constant. Then same thing, doesn't seem to be malleable.
Sir, I'm confused by the definition. How are the cases of easy to factor numbers, how does that produce instance malleability? Isn't the chance of a number being easy to factor in those cases the same whether or not you're given a information about
No, it's much simpler than that. It's just that, I mean, which one of these?
In the easy to factor case, I don't see how that's conceptually different from the perspective of this instance malleability definition. I don't see how that's different from the presumably hard to factor cases that you just went through.
You mean easy to factor modeling?
It seems an easy to factor number, if it has, say, a 10% chance of being really easy to factor, that seems orthogonal to the instance malleability condition. If you're given factors, if you're given RSA or factorization from other numbers, then that doesn't seem to help. You still have a 10% chance of factoring the random.
Well, it's a trivial case, so I think we don't have to deal with that. I mean, in real life, we use generators that for which we can assume that they are hard to factor anyways.
Well, I see how the examples are not the same as what you did on the next slide. But what I don't see is why these examples fail, why the examples fail non-malleability. So why are those examples instance malleable? How is it, suppose you just generated a random number n,
mm-hmm.
then it seems to me the chance of factoring n is, sure, it's much higher than we want. It's much harder we get from a random normally distributed RSA modulus. But that seems to be independent of the information that you're giving on the side.
I don't
so
see that coming.
Why is your first trivial example instance malleable? That's my question.
What you meant is that if the public exponents are allowed to decompose the number,
mm-hmm.
then it's malleable. Because you should do the malleability in the other direction.
Yeah, sure.
By multiplying, you did it in the wrong direction.
Yeah, absolutely. It depends. Yeah, absolutely. You don't need the two oracles. You can do it the other way around, of course. Yeah, you can. So I was assuming that this was the public key you were given, and you are going to query these two oracles with these parameters.
See,
but you can do it the other way around.
Okay,
of course, you can do it the other way around. So you can, if you're given this, you can just multiply by E2, and then you get a public exponent, and you query this oracle.
I see.
And then you can come back.
Because you cannot factorize n, you just can invert that thing.
Sorry?
So you can invert just a particular exponent. It's not that you can factorize n with.
Yeah.
That's the point. You just invert the one.
Okay, next.
Okay, so the question, of course, is are there any other examples, except from these two ones, for which you could prove malleability? It doesn't seem to be obvious. So once again, so if you look at the commonly used key generators, you have they do not seem to be malleable in any sense, but can we prove that they are not malleable in a strong sense? That is, I'm going to give you a formal definition of non-malleability afterwards, but it seems intuitively, it seems that these two generators, for instance, are instance non-malleable.
Pascal seems to have one small business. There is a little problem probably as the first time. If you choose E to be a prime of size k bit, then you might go further than N itself.
Yeah, so.
And then if E is prime on E minus 5, then it's also
yeah,
prime.
Yeah, sure, sure.
Then
sure.
You have two equivalent instances.
Okay. So it's not a prime of bit size k, it's something a bit smaller. Okay. Yeah. Maybe k over 2. So let me just define exactly what instance malleability is. So let's consider for a minute that we have a root extractor, R. So I call it R because in a minute you'll see that R is actually a reduction algorithm. But so assume for a minute that R attempts to compute an e-through to mod n. And let's try to modelize the computational resources of R under the form of a perfect oracle A. That is, A is actually just a computational resource. Okay, so it's a perfect oracle in the sense that the oracle just answers perfectly, it never fails to answer. And so we can, of course, assume that A is actually reducible to inverting the generator. It can be zero. So if it is zero, if it is polynomial, then the algorithm R just attempts to compute an e-through mod n from scratch. So it's not granted anything particular. So now I'm consider the game zero, which is the usual game in which the algorithm R attempts to extract an if root given access to the oracle A. So here A is actually both an oracle and the problem that is solved by this oracle, because the oracle is perfect, so I can just identify the two. So in game zero, we have the success probability of this algorithm R, and I define the success of this game as being the maximum taken over all possible algorithms R. So it's kind of actually this represents the maximal success probability of any algorithm that is given access to the oracle A. Okay, so I'm just describing the computational resources, and this is the best way basically to extract an e-through given that these computational resources. So now I define game one, which is basically game zero, in which the algorithm R is also given another oracle, which is this magical RSA root extractor for different public keys. So basically, it's exactly the same thing, except that the R, that the algorithm is now sending queries to this to the RSA oracle, but for public keys that are necessarily different from the one that was given originally.
Do you allow m prime to be equal to n?
Sorry?
Do you allow m prime to be equal to n?
Yes. It's the public key n prime e prime has to be different from the pair n e, but individually they can be equal. And so we take the probability of this of winning this game, and now we just maximize over all possible algorithms R, and so this represents the best way, the success probability of the best way of using both the computational resources given by A, and the RSA oracle. So these are the number of calls to the oracle A and the RSA oracle. So now to define sense malleability in a proper way, we just look at the difference between winning the two games and maximize the difference over all possible computational resources A. So again, A here, because it's a perfect oracle, can be identified to the problem itself. So so this is some kind of function or quantity that only depends on the key generator, gen. And so it is rather easy to see that if you impose that the number of calls to the RSA oracle is zero, then you have you have exactly the same game. Game zero and game one are exactly the same, which means that delta for QRSA equals to zero is zero. And we define that instance non-malleability by saying that delta remains negligible as long as the parameters are polynomial in the security parameter. So it means that actually this can be seen as a distance from perfect non-malleability. Okay? So it's a rather formal definition, but we have to do it properly in order to be able to use that later in the possibility proofs. So the most important property of instance non-malleability is that it allows you to relate two things. To relate basically the problem of reducing the RSA problem to the problem A, to solving game one. So actually you have an unconstrained reduction, which means that the oracle can call the algorithm that solves the reduction problem can call the oracle solving here P2 on any kind of instance he wants. So we don't have to transmit to the oracle solving P2 the same parameters that were given to the algorithm. So one of the only thing we have to impose is that A must be perfectly reducible to inverting RSA, which is you have to have like a perfect reduction that if I give you an instance of the problem A, you can solve it, whatever it is, whatever the auxiliary input here is, given just one call to the RSA to the root extractor for the same parameters N. So now the main property is that is that basically we have that the success of a reduction from inverting RSA to the problem A is upper and lower bounded by solving game zero and game one. So we don't really care about the epsilons and the details, but I'm going to show you a proof of that, which is kind of sketchy and visual. So let's assume that we have game zero. So in game zero, a typical algorithm R zero solving game zero is given a public key N E and some integer Y mod N, and it attempts to just to extract the if root of Y. So R zero is given access to the oracle A, whatever the definition of A happens to be. And because it is game zero, there is no way R0 can call A on another public key here. So this public key is given implicitly to the oracle A. So we can visualize the calls to A as these green bubbles here, saying that here the calls are parameterized by the public key, the same public key that the one given to the algorithm R0. So this is game zero. Now game one, in game one, the algorithm R, R1, is going to do exactly the same thing, but now it's given access not only to the oracle A, parameterized with the same public key, but is given access to this magical RSA oracle as well, for which, you know, for other public keys. So R1 is going to call this these two oracles. And so the green bubble just says that this is a call to A, and these orange squares here just mean that R1 is going to call the RSA oracle. So this is game one. And typically in the reduction between inverting RSA and solving the problem A, an algorithm solving this reduction problem, so solves, extracts the an ethroot again, and is given access to an unrestricted oracle here. So you might well call A on the same public key here, or on other public keys. So we have green bubbles and red bubbles. So the red bubble means that the R is calling A with another public key. Okay. And now it seems to be kind of trivial to see that R solves this reduction problem. It is kind of obvious to see that if you have an R0 algorithm here, this reduction here, then you can build a reduction here too, because R0 is a particular case of R. And same thing between R and R1. If you're given an algorithm R here, you can build easily an algorithm R1 here. Why? Because we assume that you have a perfect reducibility between calls to A with different public keys to the RSA oracle here. Because you have that perfect reduction that tells that you can solve basically trivially the problem A given access to an RSA oracle. So it means essentially that reducing the RSA problem to A is basically lower and upper bounded by these two games, game zero and game one. And because we have defined instance and malleability as by saying that the distance between these solving these two games is negligible, it means simply that we have some form of equivalence between solving these three games. So it means that solving game zero is approximately the same thing than solving game one, which is approximately the same thing than reducing, inverting the generator to solving the problem. So here is the first impossibility result. So assume that some reduction R reduces the RSA problem to the problem of breaking the 1-1S of an encryption scheme E, capital E, under a CPA attack, where R is given access to this oracle A, which is basically a inverter for this scheme. So we have these parameters epsilon A and tau A, which denote the success probability and execution time of A. And that A can be called at most at times by R, and that R inverts the generator. Then we can build a meter reduction, which is an algorithm that simply takes this reduction algorithm R, feeds it with whatever it needs to function, and then solves another problem, which is the other security notion for the encryption scheme capital E, which is root extractability under a CCA attack. So how do we do that? It's very simple, actually. So the proof technique is just to see that since R is an algorithm that reduces the RSA problem to A, by definition, you can see that A is equal to simply inverting the scheme. So it's the one-way CPA adversary oracle. Obviously, A is perfectly reducible to inverting RSA because if you want to solve this and you have access to an RSA oracle, then just in one call you can do it. And so you just apply the previous lemma, and you just have to notice that game zero is exactly the problem of solving the RECCA problem. Okay. Now the thing to keep in mind is the fact that game zero is very close to this reduction R here. R is going to solve a problem which is very close to this game zero because of instance non-malleability. So you just apply the lemma, and then you get that that if such a reduction exists, then you can build efficiency an algorithm that breaks this security notion. So we can do exactly the same thing for indistinguishability, in which we show that if you have a reduction from inverting RSA to distinguishing the scheme, then we can simply build an algorithm that trivially solves the root extraction problem. The security notion REPCA that is under plaintext checking attack. So it means, this is an obvious corollary, it means that we have no hope for having an equivalence between ECCA, which is the security notion we've been trying to reach in security proofs, with inverting RSA. So this is kind of easy to see, because if you look at the map, then if you had an equivalence to inverting RSA here, because of all this black box hierarchy of problems here, you would have an equivalence everywhere, because you have an equivalence here. So you have everything here should be equivalent to inverting RSA, which is impossible, because if you have the equivalence here, then this column here would be zero, would be polynomial. So this cannot happen unless the RSA problem is polynomial itself. So under the assumption that it's not, you can have here an equivalence to inverting RSA. Yeah.
So I think you took care of this earlier, but I lost track. The where do these Dolev Dvorak-Naur style constructions where you have two keys and then proofs of consistency? So obviously they don't fit into the framework somewhere.
No. Actually, if you use Dolev Dvorak-Naur or Naur-Yun, you have several keys. Okay, so we're just repeating the basic scheme and then add some kind of proof of that the plaintexts are equal. And if you look at that, so the public key is not just one model, but you have two models. Okay. And so how do you define non-malleability? Mean that the non-malleability of the key generator, which outputs pairs of moduli, how do you define non-malleability in this case?
These
results just in the body.
They don't apply. So it's something in the structure. So you're saying that this, the framework is for generators. Structural restrictions, one of them is one key at a time, and then I think the sense is.
So at the same time, you can prove that you cannot have an equivalence. You cannot have an equivalence with the one-way CCA security notion or the end PCA security notion for the same reasons. Okay. Monomon monomon is essentially too optimistic, because it is well known that the CCA security of schemes in the random Markov model are equivalent to inverting ERSA. So it's kind of contradictory, and it's just a separation result between the standard model and the random Markov model. Okay. So the conclusion is that the ROM is useful, of course, because it allows cryptographers to be able to say something about the schemes, but it's way too optimistic. And what makes the ROM too optimistic is the fact that the security reductions are not really black box. They have access to the internals of the adversary of Oracle. In particular, they're allowed to modify the answers from the random oracles, and this is way too unrealistic in practice. So if you try to take these results and dive them to the random oracle model, it is kind of easy to see that they cannot work. Have time to get into details, but we can have discussions about that. So the question is, what is the real security level of RSA OLP and the complete family of encryption schemes based on RSA and padding functions? And the answer is, well, we don't know. So far, we know it cannot be equivalent to RSA as long as we assume instance non-malleability. But it's kind of hard to see whether you have an equivalence with weaker problems. We don't know. So again, it's using exactly the same framework. It's kind of easy to see that the same impossibility results apply to RSA signatures, and in particular to schemes like FDH or PSS or PSS with message recovery, and they cannot be equivalent to inverting RSA. It's even worse for signature schemes that are transposable, meaning that if you take the message space and the random space and you just swap them, then if you get a signature scheme by doing this, by just inverting the two spaces, then it means that the signature scheme is transposable. And if you have a signature scheme which is transposable, like PSS, for instance, is transposable, then it's even worse in the sense that we can prove that it cannot have an equivalence of a very basic security notion, which is a universal forgeability under a Kearney attack. It cannot be equivalent to the one more RSA problem, which is, of course, weaker than the RSA problem. So it means that the security has to be even weaker than that. Okay. And in the case of simple non-malleability, so I mentioned the fact that we came up with impossibility results for factoring-based encryption and signatures as well. But we have to rely on a simpler notion of non-malleability, which is the one basically in which I ask you to factor an RSA modulus, and I give you access to this magical factoring oracle for other moduli, and it shouldn't help you to factor n. So there is a similar notion, definition of non-malleability in this case. And so again, the CCA security of great number of schemes can be seen not to be equivalent to factoring, which is contradictory to what can be shown in the RAM of Oracle model. And same thing basically for factoring-based signatures. So we have now two challenges. I guess we have to use tools from computational number theory to try to solve them. So the first one is, can we prove non-malleability in a formal sense? So it seems that real-life generators are non-malleable, because we cannot come up with trivial examples of malleability. But is it possible to use number theory basically to come up with a formal proof of that property? So this is one. And the other one is, can we build malleable RSA key generation? So the interest in doing that is that you would have a chance to prove equivalence to inverting RSA for encryption schemes. That is, if you look at RSA OIP, so you can have a chance to equivalence with inverting RSI, because if you assume that generation is non-malleable, but if you used a malleable iterator instead, then you could maybe, you know, have a chance back to prove equivalence. So that would be an application of malleable iteration. And so, for instance, is it possible to in the generator to generate two RSI moduli and an n prime, so that if by magic I factor one of these moduli, then the other one can be factored easily. So that would be an example of malleability. And but it isn't clear whether we can build such generators or not. It doesn't seem to be a very